fifth case for this morning is A&F Enterprises versus IHOP Franchising.
Good morning. Please the court, my name is Neil Wolf. I'm the attorney for the appellants and debtors in this case. This isn't, at least from the standpoint of my client, an ordinary commercial dispute involving who gets how much money and when. This may be another day at the office for IHOP, a typical franchisee dispute. Their annual reports are full of records of those. But the implication for the debtors and the appellants, and in particular for Mr. Al-Farouk, who is the owner of the corporate debtors and himself an individual debtor franchisee, are monumental.
So let me just say, Mr. Wolf, cutting to the chase, we have these two different provisions of the bankruptcy code, 365D4 and 365D2, that the parties are sparring about. But what concerns me is that D4 pertains to non-resident real property leases, and your argument here, as I understand it, is that there's really, in a sense, one overarching agreement between your clients and IHOP, and it's not properly characterized as a non-resident real property lease. It's an overall franchise relationship, so you should go under D2. But there are separate agreements, and it seems to me it's actually fairly common with non-resident real property leases for them to be a piece of a bigger business relationship, whether it's a shopping mall or whether it's, you know, a company that has franchisees or in many other instances. So I'm not sure it's quite as unusual structurally as you're saying, and Congress seems to have wanted a clear set of rules for assumption of these leases. So maybe you could tell me why we should overlook the 365D4 language here.
Your Honor, if I may say, I'm not sure that I would understand or agree with the court's position with respect to other overarching relationships in a shopping mall tenant situation. 365 was crafted as D4 was crafted as part of the so-called shopping center amendments to the bankruptcy code to deal specifically with situations where a debtor tenant goes into a bankruptcy case and then endlessly postpones the issue of whether to assume or reject the lease. So here you are sitting with a 30,000 square foot space in your shopping center, and you don't know whether you ought to be out in the marketplace trying to find another tenant or not. And that can be in the case of large bankruptcies like Linens and Things or other major bankruptcies. That can be really major because these stores serve as the anchor that really brings traffic into the shopping center. There is no other business relationship there but one of a landlord and a tenant. Now, sometimes, to be sure, the rent is tied to sales or partially tied to sales, but that's it. Here, Your Honor.
You're telling us that we need to create out of this some franchise exception to the way that we ought to look at real property leases. Franchising is obviously a very common way of doing business in this country.
No. I don't, Your Honor, no. I don't believe you have to create an exception whatsoever. I think that what a court needs to do.
You might want to stand in front of the microphone so that you're.
On an individual case by individual case basis, is to look at the agreements in question and say, are these really all part of a single overarching contract? And what is that contract?
Is that for the bankruptcy court, though? I mean, you know, you've got this agreement. It says lease at the top of the page. You listed them separately on your schedules in this case. And instead you're saying the bankruptcy court needs to scour, you know, every email to make sure that there isn't some contract that's composed of separate writings, which is, of course, possible under the law of contracts.
Well, let me get to the easiest part of your question first, and then I'll get to the harder part. The schedules, Your Honor, are forms that we have to fill out. They're kind of an admission ticket to the bankruptcy court. Early on, there's a lot of information that's got to be put in the schedules, and one does not want to have to somehow find a box in order to say this calls itself a lease, but it's really something else. So I don't think the schedule issue is a true issue here. But as to the other issue, courts interpret contracts all the time. Bankruptcy courts are commonly determining whether something is a true lease or a conditional sale agreement. And what the parties say it is never controls. In fact, the law is clear and unanimous on this subject. What the parties say never controls. Here you've got a lease, Your Honor, that doesn't have an integration clause. Interestingly, drafted by IHOP, International House of Pancakes. IHOP knew how to draft integration clauses. There's one in the franchise agreement, which conveniently contains a little exception for the lease. For the lease. If you look at the franchise agreement, it is just chock full of lease provisions. I dare say, and I should have counted lines, but I didn't, Your Honor, in preparing our briefs, that if you look at it, there's as much text in the franchise agreement about lease provisions as there are about franchise. To give you an example, there's a provision about summary possessory proceedings in the event of default. The term of the franchise agreement is tied to the lease. There are multiple references with respect to when the franchise could be assigned or not assigned.
So are you saying that the lease agreement doesn't stand, is missing critical terms?
I would say it absolutely is, and those other terms, Your Honor, are in the franchise agreement. And I don't believe, in fact, Your Honor, I know because I was intimately involved in the process from committee participation, Congress was intending when it did the 2005 BAPCA amendments or when it did the shopping center amendments to address the issue of interrelated franchise agreements. All that it did, basically, is it gave some relief to those shopping center owners who didn't know what to do with their 30,000-square-foot box. And here we have another situation entirely. From the get-go, IHOP has said we want Al-Farouk and his companies out of the system. From the get-go, they've said we will not accept an assumption of the leases. We will not accept an assumption of the franchise agreements. Your Honor, if I had assumed the lease and then was unable for some reason, and IHOP has plenty of them that they've alleged, to assume the franchise agreement, we would have been up a creek without a paddle. We would have had, my client would have had, an administrative claim against the estate for years and years. In some instances, 15 to 20 years of rent, not subject to the rent limitation provisions of the bankruptcy code because it would be an administrative claim. And guess what? We would have had an empty store or an empty IHOP because they have the absolute right to move a franchise across the street in that so-called lease contains a provision that says this can only be used for an IHOP franchise and nothing else. Not a Burger King, not a hardware store, not anything else. And that was the dilemma that we faced here. And it's a difficult dilemma, and I will admit that Congress didn't make it black and white. However, courts are in the business of determining what contracts really are. And courts are clear in saying we don't look to see what the parties called them. And in this case, I would suggest, Your Honor, that my client had no choice whatsoever in terms of what this was called. But if you look through it, and while I was waiting in the attorney room, I once again read the franchise agreement, There are literally hundreds of lines of lease provisions contained in the franchise agreement. The lease is mentioned on virtually every page. And we are in a situation here where I cannot believe that Congress meant in a franchise situation to require the parties to assume or reject according to different timetables, because it just doesn't make sense to do so.
Okay, I think you need to wrap up.
I've got a red light, so
yes.
I...
All right, thank you so much.
My exit. Thank you, Your Honors.
Mr. Hochman.
Thank you, Your Honors. May it please the Court, Rob Hochman on behalf of the IHOP entities. I'm going to talk about both the likelihood of success and the merits and hopefully touch a little bit on the equities before I conclude today. And answer your question, Judge Wood, the lease is a self-contained document. There are no essential provisions missing from the lease documents. It is absolutely true.
If you are leasing property that can't be used for anything other than an IHOP franchise, and under the franchise agreement, it's within IHOP's discretion to terminate the franchise on the bankruptcy of the franchisee, among other things, then it's pretty meaningless, right? I mean, nobody is really going to lease a space of land that all you can do is, you know, look at it while the dust bunnies accumulate.
Well, there's nobody here saying that these agreements aren't somehow related and importantly related in some way.
Yeah.
Nobody's saying that. The question is whether the lease ceases to be a lease, whether through some kind of alchemy, upon the filing of a bankruptcy petition, the lease now disappears. Because if you started beforehand, remember,
I think that's an overstatement of the argument. The argument that your opponent is making is that these documents are so tightly integrated that one or the other of these provisions has to give. And we have to look to what the dominant agreement is to decide, because they travel together. They don't travel separately.
But I don't understand.
The two documents are, in fact, very tightly integrated and do not stand alone. That's very clear from their terms. The rent is keyed to profits of the franchise. The property can't be used for anything other than an IHOP in connection with the franchise agreement. The default provisions are all interrelated and interlocking, and so it's clear that they do not stand alone. So the job for the court in deciding which of these assumption time limits applies is to decide what's the dominant agreement.
Well,
and it seems to me the franchise agreement is dominant here, and this is a very common structure of franchising agreements, where there's the overarching franchise agreement which governs the terms of the party's relationship with respect to the use of the trademarks and so forth, and then there's a lease of the property, especially where there are freestanding stores, as is often the case in the restaurant business.
All of that is true, that these agreements are related. We're not disputing that. But remember, there are third-party lessors, equally as common in the franchising context, that who simply rent their space out, whether it's
not
to a franchise.
Not very many for IHOP. And
well, in this case, there are three of them.
One might need to analyze those separately, but Judge Sykes' point is if you look at least this franchisee's set of agreements, it's a very tightly linked set of business arrangements where the franchise agreement is providing essential terms for the lease agreement.
Well, let's step back and imagine before we get into bankruptcy. Let's imagine before we get into bankruptcy, whether you're a third-party lender or you're the franchise, a leasing company affiliated with the franchisor, and there's a dispute about the property. Everybody would agree that that dispute is governed by a lease, that it's governed, in other words, that the background principles of landlord-tenant law will apply to that case. If a court on the merits of this ruling were to determine...
Issues that arise in the franchising context between a franchisor and a franchisee very rarely relate solely to the property. They relate to whether the franchisee is complying with its obligations to run the franchise according to the terms of the franchise agreement.
Well, but sometimes they may. For instance, you may have situations like here where, in this case, we have a franchisee who for most of 2003 has not been paying property taxes owed pursuant to the leases. We've had to make those payments out of pocket in order to keep ourselves current under our own leases. So imagine a situation like that, isolated to that kind of issue. Everybody agrees that any kind of problem associated with that kind of behavior
would be
governed.
It's completely unrealistic to think that under those circumstances you would seek to terminate the lease but not the franchise agreement. They go together.
Oh, well, we're not disputing that, Your Honor. I'm not saying that we wouldn't seek to terminate both, but the question of this case.
So let's take a circumstance where you would not seek to terminate both.
Well, given that there are cross default positions,
the answer is no.
In these, of course, third party lessors are differently situated.
Right, that's not this case.
But that is this case, actually. There are multiple third party leases in these cases on this appeal. They have not asked for a distinction between them, and you heard today. Counsel said to you, this statute should be interpreted in light of the mall situation, not a franchise situation. But the franchise situation involves lessors who are not only franchisor related. And I think it would be a shock to the system, a real shock to the system.
It's not a captive IHOP leasing.
Say one more. I didn't hear this.
It's not a captive IHOP leasing lessor.
Not all of the restaurants are leased by IHOP franchise, an IHOP related entity. There are a few properties that have third party leases in this case.
Well, it would be easy enough to tell the district court to look at that. Let me take you to a slightly different direction. One of the arguments your opponent makes is that you would receive a significant windfall if these if 365D4 is applied. Because they have furnished a lot of value over the years, you would sell the franchises to other people. And I'm concerned about that, and I wondered whether anybody has suggested that there needs to be a way for the estate to capture the value that the franchisee has created for the franchise, perhaps by putting sale proceeds into an escrow and having a proof proceeding or something like that.
I don't think anything's been proposed along that line. And importantly, what the debtors have proposed thus far doesn't involve a sale of the franchises. They continue. They persist. They are trying to string along this case.
Oh, they
as long
don't
as possible.
You,
they want
saying
to,
you want to sell the franchises.
You want
though.
To sell the franchises.
And I'm saying if you were given the green light to do that, you might be unjustly reaping benefit that they created. And there needs to be some way of preventing that.
Well, it wouldn't be unjust if the defaults are proven, and one of the defaults at issue is defaults of the lease provision. And again, given the procedural posture, obviously nothing's been fully tried, but it's not for lack of trying on our part. 365D4 sets specific time limits. A diligent franchisee has plenty of time, 120 days initially after filing. It can get an additional 90 days, plus all the time leading up to filing, to try and figure out, just like a chain store, maybe a Circuit City has to figure out what stores it wants to keep when it files for bankruptcy. You make an assessment of your business prospects.
But they, in their reply brief, though, or whatever it was, I lost track of the labels of these things, but they say, no, it's actually you who've been making it hard for them to move forward.
Yeah,
so
they say because one of the issues that they raised to slow things down, we said we'd go to arbitration. I don't understand why going to arbitration would necessarily slow anything down. The point is, what we're trying to do here, we've actually proceeded on more than one track to try and turn these franchises over. And this goes to the equities, Your Honor. We need these franchises to be operating properly. There are all manner of defaults, and we've dealt with them, health code violations. You've got them in your brief, that are harming our brand and that we're trying to stop. So one of the things we did, in addition to asserting our rights under 365D4 when the leases were canceled by operation of law at that time, was we said we'd like to pierce the period of exclusivity, pierce the debtor's right of exclusivity to propose a plan for dealing with these. And we got everybody together, and we were going to have a trial, because what we'd have to show to do that was that their plan, which involved them staying in business, was completely unrealistic. They can't cure the defaults, health code violations, failure to keep up the maintenance on the restaurants, problems having to do with licensing issues, failure to pay property taxes, as I referred to before. They can't do this, and we were ready to prove that at a hearing. And on the day of the hearing, they said, you know what, we don't need the hearing anymore. We'll consent to the entry of an order allowing you to propose your own plan. And we have proposed a plan to the bankruptcy court involving the sale. And then, while all this is going on, we're just trying to, we got these two tracks going on. Now we have, this is the one that seems to us fastest. And that's our interest. We're not trying to get any extra money out of this. We're trying to turn these restaurants over as quickly as possible. Why? Because these restaurants are harming our brand, and especially, just like at a shopping mall, there are other parties, other franchisees who count on us to police low-quality restaurants out there and make sure that they're put in the hands of people who are going to run them properly, because they don't have any ability to protect the brand that they've invested in. So under these circumstances, Your Honor, and I want to address one other side of the equities, because I think counsel made an impassioned case for the squeeze that he's under and having to choose what to do. There is no reason to believe, as a factual matter or as a legal matter, that the debtors would ever have faced years and years and years of continuing liability under any leases. First of all, they know that we want to sell these franchises, turn them over. In other words, let someone else assume the lease obligation.
If he kept the lease and somebody else has the franchise, then he can't use it for anything else and you can't use it for anything else.
Yeah, well, but that wouldn't happen, because if he can't keep the franchise, then his effort to keep the lease will have failed. So he could assume the lease for a period of time, say, I plan to keep the lease, but then when we get to the factual finding, we show that he can't cure the defaults under either the lease or the franchise agreements, these restaurants are gone.
You accelerate the payments due on the lease.
But that's not going to happen, first of all, because there are protections in the bankruptcy code. If he assumes a lease, and then he's entitled, this is under Section 503B7, he's entitled later to walk away from it. Such an assumption can later be rejected if the circumstances bear out that he can't actually keep the business. So there are protections built in against this. There would be some administrative expenses associated with that if somebody else doesn't assume the lease obligations, which is extremely unlikely, since what we're urgently trying to do, is turn these restaurants over into the hands of someone.
All right.
Thank you,
Your
Honor.
We have the point. Thank you so much.
Appreciate it.
I think you might have run out, Mr. Wolf, but if you have 1 minute worth of things to say, I'll give it to you.
That's a tall order, because I have 10, but I'll speak fast, Your Honor. Number one, IHOP is seeking a windfall here. There have been discussions. To be fair to Mr. Hockman, he was not a part of it because he's new to the case, but they've made it very clear they want the franchises, they will sell them, and they will keep all of the proceeds, and none of it will go to the estates, and that is what they have argued for. That's number one. Number two, this business about health code violations and this and that has never been the subject of any trial. Your Honor, 5 years ago, my client was named, and I've got the photograph in my office, Franchisee of the Year by IHOP. He's been in the system for 15 years. These stores have gotten repeatedly among the highest grades that IHOP internally awards. We've been monitoring the village and township inspections, and they are good. Thank you.
Okay, thank you so much. Thanks to all counsel. We will take the case under advisement.